This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 10th of December, 1952. The title of this lecture is Flows, Patterns of Interaction. This lecture is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
This is December, the 10th, the first hour of lecture. Today we have quite a bit of material to cover here, and I believe I should cover for you in some detail such things as flows and brackets and so on. I think that would be helpful to you. The flow action is what I mean by covering some more about flows. How many actions are there in a flow? And in interpersonal relationships, how many interactions take place amongst flows? Well, now I'm going to work that out here. I haven't counted them for some time. There are quite a few. But you should know this pattern of interaction. If you don't know this pattern of interaction, you can slip your preclear into a boiler. Why? Very simple. Because any flow run too long in one direction will result in a boil-off. Any flow. What is boil-off? It is a state of unconsciousness produced by a confusion of effort impinging upon one area. It is a slow motion unconsciousness. The fellow doesn't go out because of a direct blow. He simply slides out gradually and rather painlessly because of a small application. If you were to take somebody on an operating table and simply press them with or press upon them a heavy pressure and keep that pressure getting a little heavier and a little heavier and a little heavier, they'd pass out. It's the aggregate pressure of one sort or another that causes this boil-off. How do you stop a boil-off? You simply reverse the flow line. You notice your preclear starting to boil off. Get something in the mock-up or whatever you're doing. See, this applies to mock-ups. Get it to go around and flow the opposite direction. Now, sometimes you'll be rather mystified in a mock-up. Fellow's running mock-ups and he starts to pass out. And he passes out again and he passes out again. You say, put it behind you, put it in front of you, put it over the side. He keeps passing out. Well, just keep feeding him mock-ups. That is the remedy for that. If he gets excited while you're feeding him mock-ups, feed him more mock-ups. But don't, under any circumstances, suddenly plunge in and reverse the formula, Scientology 8008, and suddenly go into that great stuff, that wonderful stuff called reality. Because you'll knock him flat if you do that. And you can really foul him up like fire drill. If you suddenly start running mock-ups and then suddenly insist on, it becomes much worse than if you were just running facsimiles and locks and so forth. He'd get better if you were doing that. But you've started him on one course and now you've suddenly reversed direction on him and you're putting him back into this universe and you're giving him less freedom than he had before. All right, the fellow will start to slide out. You give him mock-ups. He starts to slide out on a boil-off and slide out on a boil-off. And you put mock-ups behind him and above him and below him. You can just make up your mind that some kind of a flow has started to run out of an actual facsimile and it keeps slugging him and he can't do anything about it. And evidently, you can't do anything about it. What is the answer to that? Is just give him more mock-ups. Don't worry about it. But normally, if your preclear is groggy, you've just got the thing running the wrong way. If you have him doing something to somebody and he keeps boiling off, why, the probability is that he has overrun the dead or the dead eggs. Now, a dead is something that somebody did without provocation to somebody else. That is a dead. They say he deserved it. They have no other reason to do it. They say he deserved it, so we call that a dead. Fellow, Joe Blink has never hurt him. Joe Blink has never done anything to him. And yet he suddenly, just out of hand one day, blows Joe Blink's head off. And then somebody comes along. He didn't have any reason at all. Somebody comes along and says, "Hey, what'd you do? What was the idea?" "Well, he deserved it." "Well, why did he deserve it?" "Well, he had dirty fingernails," or I fella like that. He'll build up a long, involved rationalization, justification as to why he did this to Joe Blink. And there is no reason. So he will do many of these things, perhaps, and then one day you come along the line and somebody comes along and doesn't blow his head off, but somebody taps him lightly on the temple. Well, he knew darn well he didn't have a good reason. This universe requires reason. This universe above all other things must be logical. And, of course, it is logical, too. You saw that yesterday with halves and so forth. And above all else, it must be logical and non-contradictory. And so he tries to put this dead X ahead of Joe Blink, the dead. He tries to scramble the track and put it in a logical order. Something happened to his head, therefore he did something to Joe Blink. Well, it doesn't work that way, so you call it dead X, and this could be interpreted as several things. Deserved action explained would be one interpretation of dead X. The deserved action. This is why the action was deserved. This is why he blew Joe Blink's head off, because 20 years later, a fellow by the name of Cuffbaugh tapped him on the temple. That just doesn't add up. And yet he'll try to make it add up. He'll go around and he'll say, "Now look, this, oh, my head, I mean, I'm just having terrible pains in my head," and so on, and that's a very horrible injury. And if you really probed him on it, he'd say, "Well, when Joe Blink did that to me, you see, Joe Blink never did it to him." And that's what's wrong with a dead X. It's completely fallacious. And its fallaciousness is represented by the overemphasis the individual puts upon the action that happened to him. Whenever an individual's going around saying, "Look what's wrong with me," really, what he's really showing up is a dead X. He's saying, "Look, it really happened to me, and so forth. Therefore, I'm not guilty." This universe, terribly interested in justice. So he's saying, I'm not guilty, and because here 20 years after I blew Joe Blink's head off, somebody came along and tapped me in the temple, and that made it all right for me to blow Joe Blink's head off, which it didn't at all. So that's your dead X. Dead X. Well, how do you use this in mock-ups? Aha, very interesting how you use that in mock-ups. You have, let's mock up George, and let's mock up Bill. Now, your pre-clear is George. And we've got George and Bill out there in front, and two mock-ups. And we have George picking up Bill and throwing him out the window, and George picking up Bill and dumping him down the chimney, and George picking up Bill and busting his face in, and George has been mighty worried about this guy, Bill, but now you have this mock-up and you give him a real workout. One of the reasons mock-ups are beneficial is because a mock-up is not an imagined action. In the past, an individual sometimes worked this out in imagination. He would think of what he would have done to Bill and he so on. And then he keeps halting from it and says, "Oh, well, I couldn't have. I mean, people would have interfered with that, but there I sure get some satisfaction out of wringing the guy's neck. I just love to, but I just couldn't do that." He's really in agreement with the messed universe. He's imagining it, which is entirely different than mock-ups. Imagination's one thing, mock-up is something else. He really is putting a picture out in front of him in space, which has dimension with which he is doing something. That's a mock-up. And an imagined thing is just vague, and I guess. So therefore, the two actions are not the same. We actually have action taking place in time and space. And if it's really done well, it's all pegged down with anchor points. And you've got actual images which are taking their action out there, and they're going through this action. And you have a flow interchange in the mock-ups. But you don't have to have a heavy flow action. As you interchange this flow in the mock-ups, do you know that the basic energy patterning or pre-clear shifts? You can put a detecting meter, not an E-meter, but a meter which detects flows and ridges around your pre-clear and put several points out here and tune them in selectively as he runs mock-ups. And what do you find? You find out that every time you reduce the size of the mock-up and bring it down to a very solid, small object, that the ridges move in on him. You can see the ridges move in. And when you give him larger area reverse scale mock-ups, which are going up tone scale, and you're working up tone scale and so on, the fellow's ridges start to move out for him. In other words, your pre-clear is getting better off. You want those ridges out, you don't want them in. All right, so there is an actual flow takes place with this mock-up situation. You're really not just using up energy and all that sort of thing. What you're doing is shifting postulates contained in the middle of effort by demonstrating that the effort is ineffectual. There's a lot of explanations for this. There are a lot of reasons why mock-ups work, and they're all good, solid reasons. There are electronic reasons, and there are postulate reasons, and there's causation reasons, and everything else. A mock-up done right will relieve any kind of a situation. But we have, George has been mad at Bill for a long time, and here you've got him bashing Bill's head in, and all of a sudden he goes, meow, boil on. Well, you try to do it just a little bit more. Boom. What's wrong? Well, you've beat up Bill beyond the point that Bill deserved it, really. What you've got to do now is have Bill turn around and knock the hell out of that body out there you're calling George, and have the pre-clear thrown out the window and bashed in the head and dropped down chimneys and increased in size and decreased in size and smashed down to a small little statue and have pins stuck in it by Bill. Now, this might be very indigestible to George, your pre-clear. He might not like this, but after a while he doesn't give a damn when Bill does that body. And if you kept that up too long, if this was really a tough situation, a real tough situation extended over many years, you would find that your pre-clear, if you started beating up George, the pre-clear out there in front, what do you know? The pre-clear would eventually boil off. Eventually start going, meow, bong, swoop, thud. And you pick him up again. Now what's happened? Now Bill has beaten up George too long. Now, of course, you as the auditor in auditing can go ahead very neatly and to that extent agree with the laws of flows. You could just override the laws of flows, and maybe it would be better, maybe, if you did. There is no compulsion on your part just because your pre-clear starts to boil to go ahead and do something about it. Maybe your pre-clear, if you kept on having George beat up Bill ad infinitum, it might work right on out. And eventually he says, well, the hell with it. I don't even need to boil off over this. So the guy's a skunk. I don't care. And he's dead and gone. And I don't care what happens to him. Or ha, 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 I hit him in the head again. Remember, you're not trying to agree with the physical universe. You're trying to disagree with it. But within these limits, a pre-clear who is having a little bit of a rough time, something like that, you just shift the personnel around, and you will find out that you're working the situation out. You see, there's just so many reasons why George should beat up Bill, and all of a sudden you flip those things out as postulates. Now, George doesn't have any further reason to beat up Bill, but Bill is left there with all kinds of reasons why he should knock the hell out of George. Now, if you just quit the session at this point and you just left it at that, why, what do you know? It doesn't necessarily, because you could carry this situation along to a point where the pre-clear just abandoned the whole species of computation. I mean, you could just beat this thing to death, wrong way to Corrigan, fly it backwards and run up against the gods and kick them in the teeth and blam them over the head. That doesn't matter if you do that. I'm just giving you the mechanics of what happens. It's not mandatory to go ahead and obey this dead eggs proposition at all. But you want to know what's happening to your pre-clear, I'm telling you. Very simple. You get the flows going. The flow goes overt act toward Bill, overt act toward Bill, overt act toward Bill, overt act toward snore boil off. You get him up and boot him around and shake him up and say, come on, let's get some coffee down and get going here. And more overt act toward Bill, more blah. You don't have to explain to your pre-clear what's happening. You just turn around and you just have Bill change the bodies around. You don't want to use actual bodies any more than you have to. Use something else. It's always preferable. The insouciance, really, of setting up this magnificent creature, Father, and then giving him a donkey's ears. And then changing him off to a rap wolf's ears. What's a rap wolf's ears? That's up to the pre-clear. And then having father pregnant. And just change around the real universe and so on, and you'll find out that to the degree that you do that, as strange as it may seem to you, the more successful it is. It's more successful to beat up Papa, who has a rookwolf's ears, and is wearing a St. Patrick's Day hat and snowshoes, and has the body of a goat woofer, that being a special kind of goat which grows in the 81st universe. It's more successful to wham the dickens out of that mock-up than it is to take Papa's body and mock it up. Because, you see, Papa probably should have looked like, to the pre-clear, like he looks. The pre-clear was forced to look at Papa the way the mesh universe said he looked at Papa. All right, there isn't any reason why he should look at Papa that way. He says, that's Papa, that's good enough. Now, yeah, sometimes your pre-clear can be very original, and once in a while you find a pre-clear doing this. All right, I've got a mock-up. It's completely empty space. Let's pop it. No, don't say get a mock-up. Get a mock-up. Well, they work with a completely empty space. See, nothing there. You've got other things there. There's other props around, other mock-ups around, and so forth, but he just insists on an empty space for Papa. Well, that's all right. Having turned the space blue or put some blue light in it once in a while and move it around. You'll find out that's quite a trick, by the way, handling empty space and knowing it's there and then knowing it's not there. Nothing to tell you. That's really good. That really takes a good pre-clear. All right. Then your dead-dead eggs action results in boil-offs. And if you want to solve these boil-offs, you reverse it and run the thing the other way, too. Beat up Bill too long, have Bill beat up George. Have this sort of thing taking place, and it'll work out. But with that additional proviso, there's no reason under the sun why you've got to play it off on a dead-dead-ex. Now, your overt-act motivator situation is quite different than a dead-dead-ex situation, and that there's very little blame or upset, really, in an old motivator overt-act. So he got his own head knocked off, so he went down the street and he took this dear old lady and knocked her head off. Well, he had a perfectly good right. You say, don't you feel sorry about that? And he says, no. He says, I don't feel sorry about that. Why don't you feel sorry about that? Well, I had my own head knocked off once. That's justice in this universe. It's logical, you see. Cause, effect, cause, effect. Don't try to run it effect, cause. Uh-uh. That's all wrong way, too. And what you're trying to do with dead-dead-ex, you see, is run it effect to a cause. Well, that's just all wrong. So your overt-act motivator situation, the act happens to the pre-clear, and then he does it to somebody else. He really doesn't worry about that, not very much. So overt-act motivator situation, however, the same thing will happen on this boil-off. If you run more of an overt-act than you run motivators, you will get, again, a condition of grogginess resulting. It's all because incident for incident, you are really handling flows. And there is what you would call the whole flow of a dead, as opposed by the whole flow of a dead-ex, and the whole flow of a motivator opposing the whole flow of an overt act. You see, that's whole flows by incident. Your whole incident is one flow. You could say that, you see. It isn't. That incident is composed of many, many flows, but you can break it down into these gross packages of this is an incident that is outgoing, it's overt. And this is an incident that is incoming, it is a motivator. And this is an incident that's outgoing, it's a dead. And this is an incident that is incoming, therefore it's a dead-ex. You see? So your motivator and dead-ex are incoming incidents. And your overt act and your deads are outgoing incidents. Your overt act is an allowable in the law of justice, which everybody's agreed upon. Under the laws of justice, it is allowable to do an overt act. Under the laws of justice, it is not allowable to do a dead. No provocation, no motivation for an act. And the facsimiles will sit that way. So the overt act is a whole motion out, and the dead is a whole motion out. Just the intention of the action is outward, even though it has a lot of internal flows. You get how this would be. Any of the rest of them, overt act, dead, overt, all contain a complexity of flows. And all it monitors is what is the average of flow in the incident. Well, the average flow in the motivator, it has more inflow than it does outflow. You know, here's a fellow, he's standing there, and somebody hits him in the head with a stone axe. And there's a lot of inflow there. So it makes the whole incident an inflow incident. It's dominated. An incident is dominated by inflow, or it's dominated by outflow. And then you can treat the whole incident as one. You understand that there's a number of flows involved in every single action. The swing of that stone axe hitting his head, the swing of the axe itself, is a complexity of flows, and I'll show you how many here in a moment. There's an exact number of flows. Now, any flow is an exact number. All right. So what does this add up to? This adds up to the fact that a guy's whole track can be too many motivators and not enough overts. What kind of a guy do you find this fellow? He's overt as hell. He's got all his inflow, and he's trying to get rid of it. And he goes around, and he, just for no reason at all, he's mean, and he kicks little babies in the crib, and he's just ornery, and so on. And somebody says to him, well, I think your grandma is a good old lady, nice old lady, she's always nice. Yeah, I like to strangle the old bat. You know, he's a fairly safe guy to have around, if truth be told. He's really safer than the other one. Why? He's quite outspoken about it. He's got an enormous reserve of motivators. He's got all this big reserve of motivators, and he's all got them cocked there like crossbows. And they'll fly out in the fellow's face. He can be at a lower band on the thing and have too many. He'd be reeled down in the band and still have too many motivators, only the balance has shifted again, and be only covert in getting rid of his motivators. He's not safe. He's kind of dangerous. But there's a harmonic action here. We have a guy way upscale, and he's got all of these motivators. They came around, and they burned his castle, and they did this to him, and he became a bandit. And now that he's a bandit, God help anybody. Boy, has he got a lot of motivators. And they say about Jesse James, the railroad drove him out and busted up the old folks and that sort of thing. It's probably true, because the guy essentially wasn't a bad man. He just was mad at railroads, and he was mad at bankers. And he sure did take it out on him. And it says something that his entire area and the whole country actually was all on the side of Jesse James. Everybody was on his side. And it took a banker and a guy who was glory hungry to shoot him in the back. But the point is that everybody goes all out for that kind of a bandit. Why? They realize that he's just operating on too many motivators. And so... And he's got all these overt acts, and they did it to him. And so it's a sense of justice. Justice, this time, is running away from the police. I mean, it's going in the opposite direction. And people say, yep, that was just. Sure, Robin Hood, all that sort of thing. And people recognize it. They say, well, the reason why so-and-so was a bad man and so on was because, and now they give a long list of personal injuries which he himself suffered. For instance, Billy the Kid. Well, had lots of good friends, and he had this kind of a reputation. He'd had a lot of bad things happen to him when he was a little kid. And truth told, Billy the Kid couldn't do anything wrong, really, in the public eye. And yet this fellow was so overt act happy, he came up to a ditch one day where there was a couple of Mexicans digging the ditch. You see, he never counted Mexicans. No telling how many Mexicans Billy the Kid killed. He killed 21 white men. But Lord knows how many Mexicans, because it's an incident like this. He comes up to the ditch, and there's a couple of Mexes there digging the ditch, and he just simply draws and shoots them dead. Al wanted to know, what's the matter with Hugh? What you doing that for? Oh, I don't know. If they didn't do anything, they would have done it. So as irrational as this may seem, justice shifts over very easily into the lap of the outlaw. And what he does then is justice. Just because he's motivator rich, which means he'll indulge now in overt acts. Now he goes down tone scale, and he does a lot of these, and he does more, really, just in terms of sheer quantity, arithmetical quantity. He does more overt acts now than he has motivators to account for it, so naturally some of them become deads. Now instead of doing overt acts, he's doing deads. He's used up the bank. He has done more things to other people than have been done to him. So now he's in a situation where whatever he does is a dead, not a deserved action. He's used up his credit, something like some fellows in Scientology. They had lots of them had lots of justification for doing lots of the things, but I'm a pretty mean, ordinary guy. But they've used up their credit. Now, let's look at the other way around now. What happens when he gets too many deads? Well, he'll really rig it in such a way that he'll sooner or later get a dead ex. And one day he's out, and this little Mexican boy hits Billy the Kid with a bean shooter. Too many deads by this time. And he says, ow, 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 what a terrible bruise. How I am injured. Oh, my, look what's happened to me. Look how terrible this thing is. What he's saying is, yes, I know I've done too many deads. Don't punish me anymore because, look, this bean shooter did all the punishment that I deserve. Nobody else looks at it that way. So there he is, all of a sudden he's sitting way down tone scale from where he was before. Now you get neurasthenia, hypochondria, all sorts of weird manifestations. For instance, you ever look at a preclear and have the preclear obviously is not in bad shape at all. Obviously they don't even have a bad headache or anything of the sort, and they keep saying, oh, my headache bothers me so, and this bothers me so, and it's my big toe, I have cuticura or something, and so on, and you start healing up this thing and healing up that thing, and they go out and they bark their shins, and they're just very, very dead X hungry. They have a thirst for dead X's. They've got to have things happen to them because they've used up their credit. If you understood banking, elementary banking or elementary bookkeeping, you would have a complete command of this type of exchange and interaction. It's just a matter of credits and debits. He's done too many things, therefore he's in debt, and he has to be paid. So they pay him. Well, he'll go out and pay himself. Nobody else will pay him. These guys are dangerous. They all of a sudden show up in the middle of the road asking to be run down. They will find it so impossible to get paid adequately that they have to practically kill themselves and take you with them. They'll come around and they'll stand right straight in front of you and say, yap, 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 and you look at them a moment and you get very puzzled. You say, aren't you aware of the fact that if you continue to stand there and continue to say the things you're saying, you're going to get your silly head knocked off? And the guy says, well, yap, 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 pow! What do you know? He gets up and he says, yap, 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 some more. This is a weird one. This is really beyond belief. So you take the guy and he says, yap, 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 some more. So you take a club. You fracture his skull. He goes to the hospital. He's non-conscious for a while. He comes back. The next time he sees you, he goes, yap, 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 yap. Boy, he has found a source of payment. He's not going to leave you alone. And the bigger and more important you are, the better your reputation is and so forth, the better that payment is. Isn't that interesting? So he's going to come around. So your poor old gunman back in the early days, good God, they always had some damn fool standing up in the bar and saying, yap, 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 yap. And the fellow said, you say that once more, you better start grabbing leather. And the fellow says, yap, 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 and pulls out his gun. And as the gunman watches him pull the gun out of the holster, cock the thing, level it, then the gunman shoots him between the eyes. I mean, pow, so he draws and fires. He said, can't understand it. The guy wasn't a fast draw. I didn't do anything to him. I've only been in town an hour. I haven't stepped on any toes. I don't know what friend he has. And yet there he lies dead. Completely baffling. And the gunman feels a little bit silly about it. He feels upset. He's been made to use one of his credits. So, now, this fellow comes home from the hospital with a fractured skull. You fracture his skull again. And he's still yap, yap, yap. So there's just no curing him of this till all of a sudden one day you've just ruined him. Of course, he's ruined you, too. But you've just ruined him utterly. And he appears to be very happy. You say, for Christ's sakes. Now he's not even going to take out any revenge. Now he's happy. The hell with him. What is this? This is the mechanism of life continuum. It's another method of survival. It's another method of borrowing identity. It adds up to this. If a person can make one do enough to him, then the person who does it to him has to do a life continuum for him, which is another method of making identity survive. Now let's go over that again very slowly, because it's quite important, and we'll explain a very strange thing about human behavior to you. We'll render a lot of behavior comprehensible. And that is simply this. We have here a situation where your fellow's life, let's say, is going from point X over here across the line, and he gets along all right to there, and then he starts taking a dive, and he knows he's not surviving. He has done too many deads. His credit is all worked out. So he's not going to survive as his identity. He knows that he goes off and he gets knocked off between lives there. These mannerisms his body has are cute. All of these various things are sweet and nice, and he doesn't want to give these things up, and he wants somebody to carry the ball. How does he get somebody to carry the ball? He encourages somebody to do against him some deads, completely undeserved actions. There's no deserved action at all. If you were to look at a graph, as in A here, this is your cycle of action. And it starts in at this X over here and goes over here to X1. This is start. That's stop. This fellow might be a wide-open case. He might apparently even be young. He might be in all manner of... you wouldn't think he'd do this. But he, on his wide spiral, is right over here toward stop. He's way over on the arc. He's over here at point B. And there he sits at point B, and he knows he's passing in his chips. Don't be fooled, because a body looks vital. The thetan and so forth may be on his last legs of the spiral. And you get these strange, strange manifestations. And they become very unstrange the second you understand this particular line. So here he is up here in figure one. And he's coming along here. This character in figure one is at point B on this spiral in figure two. And he's too many... Right here at this point here, this point G, that would be called too many deads. He's done too many deads. He's also on his way out in other ways, mostly because he's done too many deads. He's used up all his credit. Now he's got to accumulate a dead X, and he's got to have somebody do a life continuum on him. Another method of survival. Survival is self. Survival is an identity. How does he get that identity to survive? He gets somebody to commit overt acts against him and deads against him. Because then they'll have to do a life continuum for him. So here you come over here. Why? And you come along this line. You're just as happy as can be and so on. And your life cycle's about here, and you'll get at this same span in time, and all of a sudden, this character shows up. And he stands there and lets you knock his block off. And he falls down, and you knock his block off of him. And you say, look, for Christ's sake, be reasonable. If you keep that up, I am going to take your guts out and string them 32 feet away and torture the other end. And he says, I dare you to. You're just looking for an excuse. You're just being mean because. The trouble with you is, and people like you, that pow! So you take him down the torture chain and you put him on the rack, and he's even passing out. He's still insulting you. But what happens to you, Mr. Y? What happens to you? From this point in time, G, you go downhill too, but you're strong, which he knew anyhow. And you're Mr. YX. From there on. See here? From point small a to point G, Y, you were Mr. Y. And from point G on over here to the end of time, you are Mr. YX.
Your behavior and activities is modified by having to do a life continuum for this fellow. You're expiating for his crimes, actually. And he makes you do crimes against him so that you'll do a life continuum for him. Isn't that neat? There's several methods of survival. One could be called, in figure three here, one could be self plotted against time, and that's many identities.
And here could be your other dynamics, your culture. And your culture will go also through many periods. And then, in addition to that, you have your personal one life self. That goes on through its cycle of action. And then you have your personal objects, one life, that goes on. And then, what do you know? You've got your life continuums for others. Life continuums actually for self, by others.
Now, these guys are always leaving wills, as though messed objects had some importance. Who's going to inherit what? And who's going... All he's saying is, who's going to take care of these objects for me? Yeah, I've got to continue in survival through these objects. He's saying here, his personal one life self is, who cared for this body? And I cared for this body. And now we've laid the body to rest. Now we've got another one. And then we've got a life continuum by others. And we've got personal objects, one life. And one of those personal objects is one's name. Oh, you can always get a rich man to fix up some mountains of the moon or something of that sort on the strange feeling he has that you're going to name a peak after him, and this makes his name survive. So that's a survival of identity. His direction of survival, the great thirst for personal identity. The man recognizes that he has an identity, and he wants this thing passed along. Identities have two uses. One of them is to group and label something. And another one is to do a vicarious survival for somebody. The first one is working. The second one, of course, is just idiotic. I mean, a man's name, that's very amusing when you come to think about it. This name, and you look back past the past and you see this. You're very impressed. You read the word Lucretius. Well, he's probably named Johnny Jones today. And or he's maybe a very smart guy down at Bell Labs or something like that. He's going along the line. And yet, the only reason you're really using the word Lucretius is not for any other reason than it's an identification of a piece of work, which keeps it identified as that piece of work. And as long as it is so identified, it cannot be corrupted or confused with the work of, Pope Pius or something. You see? So it's a differentiative mechanism. It's a label. You find that in making products all the time. You go down here and you get the G. Whizzer Electric Company's refrigerator. The truth of the matter is it might be some good, but most of the time it's no good. There's real reason why the G. Whizzer Refrigerator Company isn't well known throughout the length and breadth of the land, and that's mainly because their refrigerators are lousy. And you go down here and you get a refrigerator which is a GE, and you know the refrigerator is going to sit there and go pocket to pocket to pocket to pocket to pocket. It's going to refrigerate. So GE, that's an identity of a great sprawling organization, and it's just there. It's a label, however, which can extend over and identify and serve to differentiate for people objects. It becomes a symbol for many things. The word Lucretius becomes a symbol for these many things. So it identifies a piece of work. And as long as that piece of work is grouped under the word Lucretius, it's like saying any other combinations of words. You could say it was an Anatan or an alerter pad or anything of the sort. But people have got this spooky notion about personal survival with regard to a name. That's very weird. For instance, there's been considerable insistence, continuous, really, insistence on my part that techniques developed and grouped under the heading of Dianetics and Scientology and so on. Why, they have my name on them. That's very, very interesting. But you notice how this has slowed down the squirrels. A piece of work was a piece of work. And look at the techniques which have existed in the field. Those didn't have my name on them. No time was spent on their research, or they weren't a body of data. Some of them were good, some of them passable, and so forth. Well, we're sitting here with a body of data. I knew what I was doing. I was trying to get together a body of data. I wasn't trying to make $8,655,000 bucks. I wasn't trying to do a lot of other things. And then, of course, the joke of it is that although this body's name is Hubbard, my name is not Hubbard. And probably nobody will ever know my name. It's very amusing. Well, you've got to think about it. It's a jest. But once a person realizes that, he realizes some of this light continuum mechanism by others is so much Boswaz. It's just an identified object. The guy goes over in the level, he's pretty low tone scale when he does this. He gets way down tone scale, and he goes around insisting that people do mean things to him. And then he'll come around to you as an audience, and he'll tell you all these mean things people do to him. I know several rather risque stories which I have heard at various places in space and on Earth. Something about, are you bragging or confessing? Now, that's very much to the point here. You want to look at this preacher when he comes in and tells you all the things wrong about him and how sad he is about these things? You want to look at him very, very closely and you want to say, are you bragging or confessing, mister? He's not confessing. He's bragging. He's saying, look at all this. I've got all these credits here, and I've had all these dreadful dead exes done to me. And the only reason he's talking about it is he knows he's lying in his teeth. He really basically knows he's telling you a big lie when he tells you how bad off he is and that he's been adequately repaid for all of his sins. Because if he'd been adequately repaid, he would feel no compulsion to brag about it. He would simply go back on the new cycle of raising hell with a whole flock of deads and overts. So when he comes in, what are you running this guy? He's got a headache, he's got a footache, he's got an earache, he's got lumbagosis or the medulla oblongata, and he's got a distortional, torsional G-space. All through his arithmetical ability. And there he is. You're expected to straighten him out. And what he's really saying is, look how bad off I am. I have to go see the practitioner. Yeah, I'm really bad off. Yeah. Look what they drove me to. Shows that I paid. And I'm all paid up, and look at all these credits I've got. Here I am, sitting here, being given Scientology. Isn't that cute? And that demonstrates and that proves to everybody that I have, therefore, a superfluity of dead exes. I've got all of these motivators, all these things have been done to me, and I've got too many of them, And you take one away, and he gets a little bit worse. And you take another motivator away, and he gets a little bit worse. And you take another motivator away, and all of a sudden he gets divorced. His life starts going out of balance like mad, and you say, what on earth's happening here? Well, boy, what's happening is but easy to trace. You made an incorrect evaluation of his credit-debit ledger. You said, this guy has too many things done to him. You bought his evaluation. His evaluation was made in the mess universe, and therefore it is in reverse. Therefore, it's in reverse. So if he came in to tell you how all these things have been done to him, and that's why he's in horrible shape, uh-oh. You just run him doing things to people. He'll get nicer, and he'll get nicer, and he'll get pleasanter and calmer, and he'll keep telling you every once in a while, you know, we really haven't done anything about my gluteus maximus that my father used to kick all the time, and he will mention this less and less and less, and you get cheerfuler and cheerfuler, brighter and brighter, and you'd think it was because he's just realizing that he actually can stand up to life. You might rationalize it that way and say, well, by mock-ups we have convinced him that he could stand up to life. Oh, no. By mock-ups, we've straightened out all of that superfluity of debts that he did. We've straightened that up very nicely, and now he's got a bank which has more motivators than he has overts and less debts than he has debt X's, and so he's become a cheerful, comfortable, calm guy. He knows that if somebody sits in front of him and says, you're a bum, that he has enough credit on the ledger in order to reach over and quietly and cheerfully and calmly garrote them. And he has now that right, so therefore. For instance, we got a pre-clear here who is actually demonstrates that whole principle. This pre-clear has really had to slow himself down to a walk. But what you ought to run is this pre-clear doing things to people. This pre-clear is really in pretty good shape. But they will feel degraded, degradation, loss of self-respect, and that sort of thing comes out of this credit-debit ledger thing. Degradation is having asked somebody for a rank. That's degradation enough. Or having asked somebody for a category and then having had it taken away. In other words, force was so small that one had to apply to somebody else for force. And then having applied to somebody else by force, even then he had it removed from him. He no longer had that force. That is degradation. Loss of force on that scale. First he was, of course, his own authority. The guy goes out and by his own warrant tangles with the universe. Somebody comes along to him and says, where's your commission? And he says, my what? Where's your commission? Where's your license to survive? This guy's liable to lean on them rather heavily, and they go down to a small splash and say, do people around here need a license to survive? He feels mighty tall. All right, I'll give you one. He's his own authority and operates by his own warrant. He executes in complexity. He does not feel that he needs anybody's permission. And then, being in this universe, this debit, credit, justice, injustice thing comes in. The reason it comes in is purely because of flashback, you understand. When he hits Joe, he gets the re-impact of Joe's pain. And this gets mixed up in every impulse to hit Joe. And his own feeling of great feeling of competence and everything will disintegrate because he feels very competent and all of a sudden he feels pain. He feels very competent. He cuts Joe's throat. He feels pain. The reward then for cutting Joe's throat is pain. So he gets this double flow action, and it convinces him at last that there is a debit-credit system at work in the mesh universe. And so, therefore, he has to have justification in order to do what he does. But that's silly, too, because the flow's still keep catching right on up with him. It doesn't matter how much, quote, justice there is behind one of these flows, really. It's just a little bit better if it's motivator overt, so on. A flashback is a flashback. When you fire a gun, it kicks. A guy accumulates too many kicks. And after that, he gets his credit system all upset. So So let's look at this, then life continuum, realize that there are a lot of people around asking for things to be done to them. And a lot more people around asking to do things for somebody else. So things alike have to do with this credit, debit, balance of flows. And wherever we look on this cycle of action, we'll find out that a person doesn't start asking for a license to survive until he's gone past center on the overall messed universe cycle. He's got to be past center before he starts worrying about this. If a person worries about flows, or if flows have entered in, he's at a point of the tone scale where flows badly influence him, he can then count more and more upon being responsive to flows. And of course, the flows are all backwards, and he eventually winds up in a heck of a mess. Now, when you're doing mock-ups, then you have to pay attention to this with pre-clears who are low on the scale. It's actually much, really more important, the way I view it, to pay attention to space rather than to flows. It's more important to stake out space. If you've got a pre-clear who's kind of bad off sometimes, just having practice with anchor points and maybe just having put out 8 anchor points, you know, 8 corners, make himself a cube. Just make him practice that and hold him, no matter where he is, and just make him hold him for a little while. You'll get the strangest manifestation takes place. The guy starts to get calm. He recognizes instinctively, really, the only space there is for him is the space he makes. The anchor points that are made for him are not anchor points for him. So when you get your pre-clear mixed up with flows, well, you can expect all these silly things to take place. Life continuums and dead X's, and he comes around and he's got a headache, and he's got a headache because he kicked somebody in the head when he was much younger. And it's all backwards. He complains to you that he needs treatment, so you run out of him all the mean things he's done. He gets well. Now, if you want to repair a marriage, you can wreck marriages as an auditor with great ease. Just process one of the marital partners without processing the other. The thing will fly out of balance like mad. And you've got to put it back in balance again somehow or other. You just keep an eye on it, make sure it doesn't go too bad before you pick it up. All right, now let's get this overt act motivator. So we process out of somebody a whole bunch of deads. Oh, God, we get him doing acts out here with mock-ups, and boy, we get him bashing people's brains in and bashing people's brains in. You'd think automatically that this would bring him way down scale to a point where something or other was going to be bad or something. Oh, no, he gets brighter and brighter and more alert and more alert. You see, what you're doing is really running out all the debits. You're putting him, as far as this universe is concerned, so he can go out and raise hell. And he does. And he goes home and he, frying pan, customarily, as he usually gets inside the door, frying pan usually greets him, hits the wall alongside of him. He gets inside the door. This time he usually says, "Thank you, dear," and creeps over to the chair and sits down, says, "Is supper ready, dear?" And the frying pan hits alongside of the door this time, and very cheerfully he picks the frying pan up and he goes out on the front walk and he sharpens up one side of it. Goes to work. And of course, this is a great surprise to the girl in the case, and she decides all is lost because she sees her control mechanisms unbalanced and she has a stranger in her midst. She gets really upset, and she doesn't take into account, because the GE is a family man, the GE is lost without a family. It's very strange, but Homo sap is a family unit. The GE is built on that basis. It's fascinating, fascinating. If you wanted to study the GE, you really get yourself some data about what could happen in this universe. It's not important for you to know it, but a lot of your urges toward families and so forth are not Thetan urges at all. They're the GE. The GE can't survive at all without a family unit. He's just as dead as a mackerel if he isn't a family unit. Whereas your thetan is just dead as a mackerel if he gets too mixed up in family units. So you get this terrific starvation, family starvation, and so forth for the GE. You see, he's lost his independence of action and so on, and for passing along this line and so on, this terrific dedication that he has, fabulous piece of dedication. He feels this terrific responsibility for getting this life continuum going. He's got to continue himself. That, you find that in cells. When a cell divides, what do you know? It duplicates its memory bank and hands it over to its progeny. Well, man thinks he's doing this. When he duplicates himself, the GE duplicates itself, it thinks it's handing its memory bank over. And maybe it is. Who knows? You can't talk to GEs. They're kind of cycle. They're really monomanic. Boy, are they conservative, too. Whee! They're really stuck. They're very able, though. Terribly able. This thing can come along, it builds a heart, and it's a good heart. Somebody was a master craftsman down here working in a machine shop that could build as uniformly pistons as the GE can build hearts. That guy would really be at the top of his class for all time. Well, you see, the GE has these capabilities. They just don't happen to be necessarily the finest capabilities there is. And by the way, you can fall into this dreadful trap with a GE. You see, he uses the messed universe with which to build. He's gotten very bad off, and he has to use messed universe materials all the time, and the protoplasms and so forth, which have been developed back across this protoplasm line back through, he has to use that, and he has to use all of these various things in order to construct and construct and construct. He jumps around on lines, by the way, but he'll give the initiative to the protoplasms and some of the blueprints which he finds on the protoplasm line. So you get similarities of appearance in families, but complete changes of character as far as the body's concerned. Then you add a thetan in on it, and boy, do you get some wild ones. Another identity. So you get this situation here with the GE, and your GE is busy build, and of course he's got to have a family to build with. And your GE is lost out completely as far as the first dynamic is concerned. He isn't worth hell room on the first dynamic. He just isn't. He will lie down and perish rather than work alone for himself. Guy goes out here and he sits down in a little apartment someplace and he reads, and he writes on this poetry and he reads, and writes on the poetry and he goes back and he works someplace or another in order to get enough money to go back and read. No, not your GE, no, sir. A thetan will do that, and the guy could be driven to do that, but if he's in close association with the body, he finds it impossible to do that. He feels he has no motive. That's because the body has no motive. That's because he doesn't have a family unit. That's what gives him his goals. He's got a goal and a messed goal and lineage goal and all that sort of thing. You get this terrific family thirst. You get your GE surviving best and being loused up the most because of interfamily relationships. That doesn't necessarily mean that your thetan is even vaguely aberrated on this line. Your thetan is much more interested in a higher level debit and credit system of what he himself has done to himself, by himself, and for himself. And your thetan, by the way, can much more easily go into a group. Families are not good groups. They're bad groups. So, all this stuff applies more to Homo sapiens because of the GE than it applies to a thetan. You'll see this whole picture change in an individual after you've theta cleared him and brought him up toward cleared theta clear. Until you've done that, remember this debit and credit proposition and the gross nature of flows. The fellow has been flowed in upon too much, he's going to outflow. If he hasn't been flowed in on enough, he's going to inflow. That's all there is to that. Okay, let's take a break.